Welcome to another episode of Life on the Road. I am Scott Bolwidge along with Alfonso Key. And once again, if you see us in unison, we've got another special episode. And if you can't tell already, this episode is going to be bigger than basketball. So we are excited to have our guest on today, John Thompson. He's the head coach at North Carolina Wesleyan over in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. And Coach Key, give us a little bit of background on Coach Thompson.
Well, Coach Thompson is at the phase of college basketball. We kind of walks in that word we use loosely, legendary status, a monumental a change agent, a culture builder for one institution. He has been over 25 years in leadership at North Carolina Wesleyan University in capacity of head successful coach, record breaker, and we look forward to hearing his journey, being unique, being at one place for so long, and obviously taking care of us as first class, big time coaches do. John Thompson.
Our special guest tonight on our Life on the Road podcast is the head coach at North Carolina Wesleyan in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Let's welcome to the show Coach John Thompson.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to see both of you. Longtime friends.
Goes right back at you. And again, this time of year, we're so grateful for your time.
I appreciate you guys. I appreciate what you are doing and, just honored to be part of it.
Well, you know, we won't keep you because I know you're busy, especially this time of year. So first question that we ask all of our guests is what made you want to get into coaching? And then where was your first coaching job?
Okay. Why did I get into coaching is going to be kind of twofold. First and foremost, I got into coaching because I was not good enough to continue as a player. And then that would have been my dream is to continue playing. I wasn't good enough, wanted to stay involved with the game, and coaching was certainly the next best thing and has become a great thing. But also beyond that, when I was about 14 years old, I remember speaking with one of my father's coworkers, and he asked, kind of the typical, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of question.
Right.
And my response to that was, I had several things on my mind, and they included being a teacher and a high school coach. They mm-hmm. included being a guidance counselor. They included being a social worker. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I've come to find out is that through coaching, I get to kind of do all of those things.
You do.
And so it's been great. My first coaching job was at St. Andrew's College in Laurinburg.
Okay.
And I worked for a guy named Mark Simons, was an outstanding coach there for many years, went to Georgia for a few years and came back, was the head coach at Elon, and most recently has been an assistant on the women's side at Michigan State.
Okay.
But fortunately for me, I was not his first choice. but fortunately for me, the guy who he wanted was married and had two kids and couldn't afford to take the job, and I was ready.
So how old were you when you took that job?
25.
Okay. And what was that first experience like for you? Because St. Andrews was a NAIA school back then. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were actually Division III moving toward NAIA. We would be NAIA the following year. It was a great experience. I think the first thing that I learned was while I thought I was a fairly good student of the game as a player, I mm-hmm. thought I had a fairly good IQ as a player. Mm-hmm. I quickly learned how much I didn't know. Yeah. And significantly, I didn't know how to teach it. Yeah. Even things that I did know how to do and knew about the game, I didn't know how to teach it. And that was important, obviously.
Well, Coach, getting a little personal, I mean, give me just a hint on that big salary and benefits, and the car and the phone. Like, what all came with that first great coaching job down in St. Andrews?
Yeah, my job at St. Andrews paid $1,500 for the year to be the assistant basketball coach. And but in addition, they offered me the position of equipment manager for all sports, which was a minimum wage job that I could not exceed 40 hours a week. And
I never knew that.
Yeah. So it was, I was washing, and an important story here, but I was washing everybody's practice gear every day, soccer, baseball, volleyball, wow. Washing practice gear. I was setting up the volleyball net for games, pulling out the bleachers, all the whole deal. And I remember distinctly being in the men's room and a soccer player walked in. And he said, "So let me get this right. You have a college degree and you're washing my dirty jock." And I said, "Yes, that's accurate." And in the moment, I felt minimized. Something.
Right.
But I quickly acknowledged in my own mind, this is a means to an end.
It is.
This is a foot in the door. This is a starting place. And I would happily go back and wash that guy's dirty jock again, knowing the path that it would set me on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So how long were you at St. Andrews for?
I was there 1 year.
Okay.
And through working summer camps, which you guys would call it, like in the 70s before me, in the 80s when I came into the profession, and through the 90s, really, like working summer camps was it's how everybody did it.
All right, job training.
Summer recruiting was not what it has become.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And summer camps is where you learned how to coach, mm-hmm. you learned how to teach, you learned mm-hmm. different techniques and different drills, you learned from yep. older coaches,
how
and
to work.
You networked, mm-hmm. built relationships.
Right.
And for probably 10 years or so, I worked 10 consecutive weeks of camp in the summer. Back in those days, camps were Sunday to Friday.
Right.
They weren't these 3 and 4 day camps like now.
Yes.
Sunday to Friday, and then Friday you might be done at lunchtime, you'd get a check, and you'd be off to the next location.
Wow. That's
everywhere from Syracuse to Georgia Tech and all kinds of stops in between. I was doing summer camps.
Wow.
And that was really important for me mm-hmm. in my development as a coach. And through that process, working at Syracuse, I got connected to a guy who needed an assistant at St. Lawrence University in okay. upstate New York, and made the move and got a huge pay increase.
Okay.
I got $6,500 for the year. And I got a meal ticket. I got all my meals for free.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was huge.
Price of living is huge. That's a big jump geographically from St. Andrews. And your hometown is Durham. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So you just took the job, didn't even worry about the weather. I hope you had a coat and a hoodie. I mean, you just were gone.
Yeah. The culture change and climate change was significant. Mm-hmm. We did a phone interview, and of course, this was before Zoom. There were no right. cell phones, no computer connection right. like that. And so he did a phone interview, and he said, "Well, hey, look, let's do this. You come on up, and if you don't like it, you can go. And if I don't like you, I'll send you back. And that's how I took the job. And so 17 hours, and all I knew about New York was New York City.
Right,
right.
I had no concept of upstate.
Thinking you're Manhattan. So,
you know, I was 2 hours north of Syracuse. I was 20 the Canadian border.
Yeah, you, wow. You definitely have the country.
And so learning about their culture, learning about, you know, dealing with the snow, which was just so routine to them. Our first snow was the week before Thanksgiving. That was 12 inches. And the last snow of the year was the last weekend in April.
Wow.
And I really didn't see the ground in between. But the greatest thing about that was the many, many doors that had opened for me, the connections right. that I made throughout New York, and particularly in New York City recruiting. And New York was at that time such a hotbed for recruiting.
Yes.
And high school coaches, AAU coaches, Tom Konchowski, who used to run HSBI, Tom Konchowski. But it was just, it was a tremendous opportunity for me to make that move. And then I was only there for a year.
Okay.
Because my head coach left to get out of coaching. I guess I drove him. But he got out of basketball.
Right.
And with only 2 years of experience, I certainly was not a candidate to become the head coach. But I interviewed that summer with Jack Jensen, who was the longtime Hall of Fame coach at Guilford.
Okay.
Interviewed with him while I was home in the summer.
Wow.
He didn't offer me the job. He offered it to told me, hey, I'm going to give it to one of my former players, which I understood. The new coach at St. Lawrence brought a guy in with him and he said, look, I don't have a spot, but if you want to volunteer, if you can figure out a way to make it work, I'll let you coach the JV team. So, which I had done the previous year anyway. Phenomenal. So that was my plan. I went back to St. Lawrence.
Wow.
Was there for about 2 weeks. And the Wednesday before Labor Day, Coach Jensen called me.
Okay.
And said, my former player turned the job down. Do you want it? I said, I'll be there on Tuesday.
It's amazing how that works.
Packed up and went to Guilford, and I was there for 7 years before coming to Wesleyan.
Okay.
I didn't realize that, Coach. That is a geographic bonanza. You're talking about 17 hours up, and that's just part of the process, just putting yourself out there, following your vision, and then things work out. I mean, I had a story not as dynamic as yours, but I was a second choice, got elevated because, you know, a guy was an NBA and had some things academically, but people have no idea. Coach, I've known you for years. I did not know that story. That is fascinating. Oh, that's fascinating. I just seen you as big John Thompson, 400 and some wins, you know, all time winning in school history. So that's phenomenal. You went out and, on faith in 17 hours and was a second choice. That is unbelievable. Thank you for sharing that. That's phenomenal.
So what was it, a relief to get back into North Carolina just to get out of the weather?
I was thrilled to get back to North Carolina. I was thrilled. And, you know, I'd gone to school at UNC Greensboro, so Greensboro right. was home for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was in school, we had played against Guilford. So, you know, certainly had familiarity with Coach Jensen. And he was so important to me in that part of my life and remains so today. You know, he was old enough that I lost my father when I was a senior in college.
Okay.
And so Coach Jensen was old enough that he kind of became another father figure for me and was certainly a great sounding board and so forth. But we were close enough in age still that, you know, he was a friend, he was a mentor. He was, you know, played a lot of roles. And he actually became the best man in my wedding.
Wow.
So you spend 7 years there, and then North Carolina Wesleyan opens up. And what made you decide to take a chance at going over to Wesleyan?
Well, Wesleyan was not open when I interviewed for the job at Greensboro College.
Okay.
And which I thought was going to be ideal, right? I'm in town. I don't have to move.
Yep.
I'll become a head coach. It's
always works out perfectly, doesn't it? Every time
right. it
works
out perfectly. It would be great, right? Yeah. So I interview for the Greensboro job, and they hire a coach by the name of Bill Chambers, former Carolina player from Greensboro, and he's the head coach at North Carolina Wesleyan. And so when Greensboro makes the hire, their AD says to me, you know, hey, you were obviously we've hired Coach Chambers and we really like him, but you've been we've been impressed with you in the process.
Right.
The AD at Wesleyan is a friend of mine. Do you mind if I send all of your information to him?
Wow.
Because now they need a coach. I said, I would love for you to do that. So he forwards the material. I get a call. I interview for the job. Actually, another friend of mine, Greg O'Brien, who was at that time an assistant at Tennessee State, interviews for the job. There was an assistant from the University of Southern California who interviewed for the job.
Wow.
And there was a fourth candidate who I don't know who that was. And I'm thinking, man, this is this is going to be tough. But for whatever reason, I'm offered the job. And I knew immediately I was going to take it. But I told Mike Fox, who was at that time the AD, I said, well, let me talk with my wife tonight and I'll call tomorrow. But very, very excited to get my first opportunity to be a head coach. I'd missed on a lot of jobs, Greensboro just being the most recent one.
Yeah, yeah, what a process.
You know, been through that and was just trying to get my foot in the door. But Wesleyan had had a lot of success in the 80s, some great teams, had been to the Elite Eight, had been in multiple NCAA tournaments. And I knew that it was a place where you could win and was very excited to come to Wesleyan.
So you get to Wesleyan and you take over. Do you have an assistant coach that is on the staff with you? How many coaches do you have working with you at the time?
Well, at the time, the only position that they had was not – really different than the one I took at St. Andrews when I first started, except that they didn't have the 40-hour a week minimum wage job to add to it. It was $1,000 stipend. And Coach Chambers, who was absolutely tremendous, and you guys may know Coach Chambers. He's not too long retired. Most recently from being the high school coach at Northern Guilford High School. Very successful coach and really good man. And he was incredibly helpful to me in my transition. And he said, look, I got a guy there who helped me.
Right.
And I know he'd like to continue. You know, would you at least talk to him? And I think he could be good for you if you like him. And I ended up hiring him. His name's Joe McDowell, and super X and O guy. You know, he was really good. And so he was with me for 2 years.
Okay.
So it was just the two of us. Well, I say that it was just the two of us. And I had two fifth year student assistants, guys who had just finished their eligibility. And they stayed on and helped, and they did a really nice job for us as well. So, was happy to have those guys.
So of course, I wanted to ask you this, Coach, real quick. Obviously, the basketball pedigree and success you've had, but just that first year, outside the regular running your program, what was your thought process as far as having an assistant and how to guide him? How are you looking back? How did you guide him? What was your mindset as having somebody to be on your staff at the same time, pouring into them to be a coach one day?
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit different with Coach McDowell because he, for $1,000, I mean, you could, he's clearly not just doing that. He wasn't a guy right out of school.
Right.
He was a professional and had a whole nother career. He's just a basketball junkie. And, you know, I can't say enough about the work that he did for me and for our program, but he wasn't really trying to pursue basketball as a career.
Right.
So my work with him is, it was different than any other assistant that I've had subsequent to.
Okay.
But certainly I do feel, and you've been in this position before, Coach, but it's equally my responsibility with my assistant coach, just like it is with my players, to help him get where he's trying to go.
Right.
No, however many steps might be involved in that, however I can guide him, however I can assist him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, certainly we've tried to do that. And I think, in all honesty, I've had great coaches. I've been very fortunate that I've been able to hire some great guys as we've evolved from that $1,000 stipend to where we now have a full-time position.
Keep me in mind, Coach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we've been able to move some, you know, had a couple of head coaches, a couple of Division I assistants, and we've been able to help some guys move on in their career, and we feel really good about that.
That's outstanding.
That's great. And you've had some, I want to say some, a tremendous amount of success at Wesleyan. What was the first, your first year where you felt like, you know, you're starting to get the hang of this thing and you've had some success? And, you know, as coaches, we kind of hard on ourselves sometimes, but that first winning season or that first time where you're just like, you know what, I think I might be good at this.
Yeah, I'm still not sure if I'm good at it today.
I'm sure you are.
Two out of three people know you.
What I will say is, though, I think
420 some victories. Yeah, Coach. Yeah, they don't come by. Them things, they charge for those wins, Coach. Those are hard to come by. Okay.
Listen, I will tell you, the first time that I felt like I had a chance to be good.
Okay.
And you guys will definitely relate to this. My first year, we were sub 500. I think we were 11-14 my first year.
And what year was that?
Year,
but what year? What year
that
was your first year?
95-96.
Okay.
But we played Chawan three times that year. And we played them home and home. And then they came and played in our Roger Taylor Invitational. And it's currently, we run it as a classic. Back then it was a tournament.
Okay.
And we played them in the consolation game of our Roger Taylor Invitational. And I mean, you guys have been through this. You lose, and particularly if you're at home, and you lose your own tournament in the first game, and now you got to play the consolation game. You know, nobody wants to come see you play in a third place game
at
Christmas time. There are no students. Our guys, you know, how are they going to feel coming in the next day? And so we got to do something to try to get them energized or whatever. And so long story short is, and for those who don't know, Chawan is coached by a multi-time Hall of Fame coach, Bob Burke. Tremendous, tremendous basketball coach who both of these guys have experience with. Yeah. And I highly respected as a coach. And we beat them that day in the consolation game. And we did a couple of different things. We threw in a couple of wrinkles that we didn't use the day before. And when we beat Chuan, who we had played pre-Christmas and lost to, at that moment when we beat, you know, I had such great respect for Coach Burke.
Mm-hmm.
I said, maybe
yeah,
I have a chance to stay in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's a giant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that is a tremendous measuring stick right there. You know, you're going up against Coach Burke, and you know, they had just gone to Division III a couple years. So, you know, I know his son Rob was on the team, and he had some very, very good players that year. And
indeed he did.
You know, and running that UCLA high post, you know what's coming.
Yeah.
But you still have to stop it.
He had a post player named Herman Jordan.
Yes.
Who was 6'3", monster from Chicago. And they absolutely wore out the UCLA high post. And they just ducked in, threw it down low, threw it down low, threw it down low. And it was like, you guard it.
Helpless.
Whatever you want. And like, we're going to run it. Can you stop it?
Helpless. Hey, Coach, as I'm hearing you talk about that transition, you know, me coming in, working with Coach Burke, first time I got a chance to see you and coach against you in that capacity, that was the era where Coach Burke was just getting his 400th win. And at that time in the state, it was right behind a guy named Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski. So that was my first. So now moving forward, talking to you, you're over 400 wins. You're that guy now. I mean, you're that guy because when I worked for Burke, 400 wins, that is phenomenal. And he was like just a giant. So it was funny that we're talking to you today and you're no longer up and coming. You're that giant. So a lot of coaches in your league competing against you are saying the same thing. If I compete with Coach Thompson, I have a chance to be good at this thing.
Well, you're very kind, but really, it makes me uncomfortable. I am certainly not a giant. I'm certainly not. I've been fortunate. I mentioned earlier, I've been able to hire some great assistant coaches,
right.
Dave DeWino, Nigel Thomas, yeah. Justin Griffith, Cornelius Snow on my staff now, yeah. Rennie Taylor back when you were coaching at Chuan. Mm-hmm. I've had some great assistant coaches. I've been fortunate that we've been able to land some really outstanding recruits. Back when you were coaching, I think we had Bradley Blue and Keith Sudler, Rob Smith, and Ryan Sinclair. Baptized. We had some really outstanding players.
You did.
And I'm the beneficiary of all of that. And Wesleyan has allowed me to have the longevity.
Yeah.
You
That's
know,
the most important.
In a profession where longevity is hard to come by.
It is. It's an oxymoron.
You know, it's been great. And so I've just, you know, whatever, the, you know, 400 wins or whatever, like that's, there's a whole lot of people who share yeah. in that. And it's not, I never scored a basket for Wesleyan.
Yeah. Well, Coach, again, you're humble and I'm going to make you uncomfortable because it's our show, but definitely you had an effect and you impacted me. My first recruiting trip, I was at working for Coach Burke, and back then it was kind of throw you in the deep water and swim. And I was at Frank Spencer, Winston-Salem. So I was walking in, wasn't sure where to go, wasn't sure where to sit, wasn't sure who to look at. You know, actually, I had the two Chris Pauls mixed up. They played on the same team. They're 2 years apart. And I had a list. I had C. Paul, which wasn't Chris. It was older brother. So I thought I was talking to Chris Paul. But that being said, I walked around. I saw you, the scores table area. You looked like you, like I didn't belong and I was lost. And you come on over there and you sat and talked with me. You guided me. You positioned me, who to watch, when to watch, and for no reason. And I'm forever grateful. And that is not an exaggeration. That's not a story. I was lost. I was walking around. I didn't know where to sit. And you took your time with me. And I'm forever grateful for that. And I appreciate you doing that for me.
Well, you know, I think most all of us have had somebody help us when we're that young guy and they, we're looking around, we don't know where to go, don't know who to watch, don't, you know, we've all been there and somebody's helped us. And I think if we're doing it right, then we help out somebody else.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
Coach, I can tell you for sure, if you didn't help him during that tournament and he went back to Chihuahua and he had a coach's meeting at Napoli's Pizza and coach asked him for his recruiting notes from that tournament, you would have probably been getting calls from Coach Key about if you had any openings at Wesleyan.
Any openings, yes.
Well, hey, listen up.
Unemployment.
Maybe if you had talked to Chris Paul instead of his brother, if you had been able to land him, you would have gotten a raise and you and Coach Burke might have been off to somewhere else.
Yeah, very
in Madison Square Garden.
So, Coach, let's talk about some of your memorable teams that you've had over your years. I know you've made some runs to the NCAA tournament, but is there any particular teams, one or two teams that you've had that really stood out as being a special team? And I know all your teams are special in their own kind of way, but just that one or two teams that may have stood out as being, you know, your more memorable teams.
Yeah, you know, that's a difficult question to answer, but I mean, clearly the early teams, as we attempted to build our program and try to establish who we are and what we're about, all of those early teams and the early recruits that we got really bought into the vision. And again, I mentioned earlier, Rennie Taylor. Rennie Taylor was really helpful in recruiting some Florida guys. He'd been a high school coach down there. And, you know, we had a core group of Florida guys that really helped us early on. And then as we established ourselves in the state, really got into Fayetteville a lot, and that's been good for us. So, you know, the first championship team in 2000, we won the regular season. Chris Moody, who's a somewhat local guy, played in Halifax County. You know, he kind of just got better every year, 6'6", 250 pounds, but had like no vertical. It was immeasurable. It was
non-existent. Immeasurable vertical. I've never heard that.
But. He had two of the best hands and two of the best feet that I've ever been around.
Wow.
And as a senior, he was a walking double-double, you know, 19 and 10, 18 and 10, put it in the book before we ever start. I don't know that he ever had a 30-point game, but he was going to get 18 or 19 every night.
Stacking him.
And he and Jamar Jones, those two guys were both honorable mention All-Americans, and we won the conference championship that year. And that kind of was the first step toward trying to really solidify something on a consistent basis. Then in 2002 was our first tournament win, first tournament championship win, and advancing to the NCAA tournament. Great group led by two guys, Bradley Blue and Keith Sudler, who I think I mentioned. Those guys were outstanding players. I mean, there was a whole host of players on that team. And, you know, ironically, Bradley Blue, I am now coaching his son, Braden Blue, who's a freshman on my team. And which is really exciting in its own unique way.
Yeah, it's just phenomenal.
You know, I've had guys bring their kids to summer camp.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Had them bring them to games. This is my first
Full circle.
That I've actually coached.
Full circle.
You know, and then I'll say two other things on teams. There was a run from, I think, 05 to 08 where we weren't very good. I mean, quite honestly, we were bad for a lot of that time. And again, when I talk about Wesleyan allowing me to continue doing it,
right?
Yeah,
You know, they could have bailed on me easily, 05 to 08. But I learned a lot. And one of the important things that I've learned is how important fit is in recruiting and making sure that you got the right people. You know, talent is important, height is important, shooting ability is important, athleticism is, all those things are important. And you don't want to, I don't mean in any way to diminish those things.
No question.
But you got to have the right people who want what you have, who want what you're doing, and, you know, that they take some ownership of that. And so, you know, I learned through that.
Have your DNA.
Absolutely. And so we've had, you know, so many good teams since then, you know, 2010, 2011, 2016, you know, all those teams were really good. Yeah. But I do want to say this past year, 22-23, that team, as much as any team, there may be other teams equal, but nobody better.
Yeah.
22-23, who tried every day to do it the way we do it at Wesleyan, who approached every practice, every game, and just like I couldn't have been any more proud of a group of guys than our most recent team. So, but there's so many. I could go on for days listing teams and players, and
that's a testament to the longevity and the excellence that you required. Piggyback on that question, Coach. Again, just, you know, Life on the Road podcast. I know the elite talent. I've been there at your gym. I've seen players leave your program and go on and play basketball. But just for the common fan, just kind of give us an insight on, you know, kind of Wesleyan a little bit, kind of your program ideals a little bit, and just kind of describe your program in two or three phases for me. If someone's never heard of your program, what you're about, and kind of what leads you in. Just a little synopsis of, you know, kind of Wesleyan basketball.
Sure. I think, you know, first I would say we try to live every day by the Wesleyan way, which is something we came up after those really rough years in the mid 2000s. We had a core group of seven guys who stayed for the summer, and they kind of put their foot down collectively and said, we can do better than this. And with those guys, we developed a document called the Wesleyan Way, just a one-page document that kind of stipulates what we're about. And, you know, it's about self-discipline. It's about doing things the right way. It's about playing the right way. It's about selflessness. It's about teaching the young guys who are coming behind you the way that we do things here, taking ownership of that.
That's not always.
And them all buying into this. So we talk about that in the recruiting process. Like, you know, you gotta want to do this and do it daily and be held accountable by me and by your teammates.
Except coaching.
So that's where it starts for us. And it has to do with academic stuff. It has to do with social stuff as well as basketball. And I think for us, that's where it begins. And ultimately, that's where it ends. Because if you don't want to be part of what we're doing, and, you know, again, that whole thing about fit, you guys have probably experienced, you know, as coaches, we think you can take a guy and sometimes you can,
but take with measurables, a guy
who has had a misstep somewhere, who you know, there's something missing that maybe he doesn't seem like he's a Wesleyan guy, but you think you can help him get there. And figuring out sometimes, though, that you can't help everybody.
You can't.
And everybody doesn't want to do things the Wesleyan way.
Exactly.
And that's hard, really. It is. When you recruit a guy and you're trying to make it work, and if he's not buying what you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't want ownership stake in the group, he just wants to do things his way. At some point, and I got this from the New Zealand rugby team, the All Blacks.
Okay. Yeah.
Great book out. If you haven't had it, if you haven't read it, Legacy.
Okay.
The All Blacks, tremendous. And so they're saying one of their 15 kind of core values is you either change the people or you change the people.
That's
and
good.
So if you got a guy like that and he can't seem to conform in mm-hmm. some way, and he can't seem to get on the same page as your 14 other guys or whatever, then ultimately, if he's not changing, you got to make a change. He's out and somebody else is in. And that's one of the hardest things, is to know when is that time, and ultimately what's best for the 12, 14, right. 15 guys you've got. What's the best for them versus what's right. good for one guy?
Always tough. Always tough. It's not black and white.
Right.
Because you talked about, just, I'm going back to 14 years old, social work, guidance counselor, teacher. You're doing all those things daily. You combine all those professions and with the Wesleyan Way. I think, Coach, I appreciate you sharing that, because I know what you're about. I know you're touched, but again, this one for the podcast, people to know. And I tell you what, if you're a parent or an uncle, or you have a young person playing basketball, that's the type of program you would like your young person to be a part of, because it's bigger than basketball.
It is. It's ironic that you say that. I mean, we have it started during the COVID year in 2021, but it's continued on. Our warm-up shirts during the COVID year, the front had bigger than basketball. That's what's on the front of the shirt. And then so subsequent to that, we've had T-shirts made with that. And that's kind of a regular thing that our guys will talk about.
I love it. I love it. I hope you don't mind if I borrow it, Coach.
Feel free.
Come see Kate Fitness.
I need to send you a Wesleyan version.
Hey, I'll wear it on the podcast. I will, happily. You know, I will. And I appreciate, again, talking about your program. Me being a high school coach, I mean, I get your mail monthly. I mean, but your accomplishments, your win, I also have got a place. But even before that, the class of your program, you would keep me posted on what you guys are doing there in the community, with your wins and losses. So I tell you what, you definitely have a blueprint for success. And I know you're humble, young, but 400 and some wins, 29 wins, Coach, not by accident. Coach Bowways, can't you see how he has them? I mean, you can't just catch them and buy them in stores. I tried to buy a couple of wins and he had to earn them. And I see how he has his. But thanks for sharing again, Coach.
But, you know, I just want to mention the your Wesleyan Way makes it very easy for guys to keep themselves there or take themselves out, because you have a standard and it's something that they know, it's no secret. So once they like see it, and if they fall short of it, then they know, you know, what the end result's going to be. So, you know, it's a very easy, it's a tough conversation, because you never want to lose anyone as a coach. But at the same time, you have a standard, they know the standard, and it just makes it easy. And I have to say that the Wesleyan Way, you know, you talk about this being your favorite team last year. Did you receive Coach of the Year in your conference last year? Is that correct?
I did. Yes.
So year 28, finishing year 28 as a coach of the year in a conference, which is an amazing, amazing feat.
It is.
Well, again, that's, look, the players make that happen. And you guys know that. That's a byproduct of great execution.
Of the North Carolina Wesleyan Way. It's a byproduct of that, which you started, you originated, and you executed. So, yes, you have a big portion of that success. But I just really appreciate your humility, Coach. It's really phenomenal and genuine.
So, Coach, we're going to keep the ball rolling here. And we have, coming up to our last two segments, First one is our no disrespect top five, and this is going to be a really good one because you have your top five influential coaches that you've crossed paths with, either as a player, as a coach. And again, if they don't make the list, it's no disrespect to them. However, you being the coach that you are, if you want to go beyond five, we will give you a pass on this one, and we'll let you go to as many coaches as you want to mention in our no disrespect top 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, however many you get to.
Okay, but he's coach, he can do it in five, coach.
I appreciate the pass because it certainly has, it's taken a lot of good influence to keep me going and keep me afloat all these years. But so I'll start with my summer league coach when I was starting out in junior high school, now middle school, but junior high. Okay. Back in the day. I had a great summer coach at the YMCA. This is pre-AAU in North Carolina, and played summer league at the YMCA as I was coming up. And a guy named Herman Pascal really knew basketball and was great during the season. At that time, he had season tickets at Duke and would take me. We sat in the end zone and so we could see the play as it was going up and down the court. And I've always enjoyed that vantage point because he was able to talk to me about things that were going on from spacing and so forth. And so he was a really good coach for me early. My high school coach, Johnny Avery, was outstanding. We didn't realize, I've talked with my teammates about it, we didn't realize how good he was at the time. But boy, I can tell you, as I got out and got into college, and then when I got into coaching, really realizing how much he taught us about how to play the game, and feel very fortunate to have played for such a good high school coach. Ed Dalma, my college coach at USCG, was very good, taught me a lot about, again, how to be more of a serious college player. I had a different coach my first 2 years, didn't have a great experience, and Coach Dalma really helped bring me back because there was a point at which I was very disenchanted with basketball and thought about getting away from the game completely. But you know, that was certainly a very positive experience with Coach Dalma. But then as I got into coaching, there's some coaches who have absolutely been incredible for me and to me, and that have helped mold who I've become as a coach. And I have certainly a part of all of these guys with me. When I started coaching, my first coaching job was as a camp coach. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I said earlier, I took my first job at 25. So I was out working for a year and a half, almost 2 years in Durham, selling copiers, computers, and other office equipment.
I didn't know that. Radio Shack guy.
Miserable every day.
Yeah.
And everything that I did outside of work surrounded basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided I wanted to get back in and pursue coaching. And I happened to be of a certain age in a certain geographic location, and it connected me to some really good people and I got introduced to Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski. And the person who introduced me was an outstanding player on his team, and that certainly was to my benefit, I think.
That helped. Right place, right time.
He said, Coach K said, well, the first thing you'll do is you'll work 4 weeks of our summer camp.
Yeah.
And I said, great. And
so I
quit my job with 4 weeks of summer camp lined up, and that's all I had. And I began trying to work every avenue that I knew, including St. Andrews. Mm-hmm. And while I'm working the Duke camp, I'm going to go down at the end of camp. I don't know which week, but at the end of camp on a Friday, I'm going to go down and interview at St. Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach K, who I've seen in passing before, but I've really only sort of known him
right
for, you know, like 2 weeks or whatever
of right.
being a counselor in his camp.
Right. Yep, in and out.
And he comes up to me before I leave. And I've been to the dorm at Duke and changed into a suit and tie. Now I'm back at the gym and I'm getting ready to leave. And Coach K comes up and he says, "Tell them if they need anything to call Mike."
Wow.
And I just about fell over. Now, obviously, Coach K was not the Coach K that we know
yeah.
of the past
right.
10 or 12 years. This was.
Yeah.
He was up. He was getting close. Getting yeah. close.
Right. Yes. So, again, I wasn't the first choice, but I got hired. Ooh. And that's how things started.
Right there.
Wow. But Coach K has been amazing to me. And remains a friend today, and I couldn't be any more fortunate. A coach on his staff, Pete Gaudette,
yep.
is one of the absolute best teachers of the game in the history of the game.
Mm.
There are a lot of people who don't know that,
right?
Because his head coaching time has not been very long.
Mm-hmm.
He's been primarily an assistant the vast majority of his career. But incredible, incredible teacher of the game. And he has mentored me beyond wow. what anybody could know. And things that I learned from him 38, 37, 36 years ago, I still use today. I'm still in touch with him today. I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago. And he's been a tremendous, tremendous influence on me. And I can't say enough kind words about yes. Coach Gaudette.
Where we at? Is that five, Coach? Four? I mean, you got the, you know, the golden chip.
I have the golden chip, but I got a couple more I got to throw out.
That's fine. I'm just making sure I'm keeping my count. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because
great eight.
So I think during that first year of coaching at St. Andrews, I'm watching a game on TV, and then I end up watching more games on TV, where Temple University is one of the teams. Mm. And John Chaney yeah. is the coach. That's and I fall in love with the team and how they play, and then his coaching. They had a point guard named Nate Blackwell, a shooting forward named Mike Vrieswijk, a big guy, Ramon Rivas. They were very good.
Mm-hmm. That's up zone.
And so, as I said, I work camp every summer, right? So I pick up the phone, I call Temple, and I said, "Do you guys have camp?" "Yes, we do." I said, "Can I come work?" "And we'll get back to you." And so anyway, I'm fortunate. I get a job. I go to work Temple's camp. I'm the only non-Philly guy.
Oh, man. On the staff. Oscar, that might be hilarious. Those guys, great personality.
And like, I have zero experience. I've never been to Philadelphia until I go to work Temple's camp. I don't know anybody there. And here's this great. Guy from North Carolina. And Coach Chaney was unbelievable to me.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
He took me under his wing. He mentored me. He answered all my questions. He became a tremendous friend. The ways that he's helped me, I can't begin, but I will say, like, every few years, every 5 years or so, we'll make a trip to Philadelphia. And the first year we went, I called him because I wanted to see if we could practice there.
Right.
And we arranged that, and he helped us get practice time. And but he really got on me. Like,
right.
Coach Chaney had a lot of similarities to Coach Burke.
Okay.
And he was like, you
great
know,
communicator.
Didn't you call me earlier? Like, where are you staying? Where are you eating? And so he said, the next time you come to Philly, you call me in advance.
Yes.
So I did. All of a sudden, on a Wesleyan budget, we're staying downtown Philly in a 5-star hotel.
No.
We're eating like you wouldn't believe. I mean, he took care of us. And he would come and he'd spend time. Every trip we made, he took time and talked with our team.
That's for
he's amazing. And, when he passed, he'd been in and out of the hospital. And it was, going back to that, to the COVID year, I would talk, because all of our schedules were so different. You weren't going anywhere. You weren't doing anything. High school games were shut down. Didn't have fans. Couldn't go to games. And so Coach Chaney and I were talking at least once a week. And he always liked for me to call him like at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And he had trouble sleeping. He wanted me to call later. We talked for 2 hours.
Wow.
And every time I would have a notepad and pen beside me, because I'm taking notes. Like, this guy is
a Hall of Famer.
And so we're talking all the time. But then, he got sick and he was in and out of the hospital a couple of times. And the last time that he got out of the hospital, I had talked to his daughter, and she said, "Well, I think he's coming home tomorrow. I have him call you." And I think I have the days correct in my head, but if somebody fact checks me and I'm incorrect, I apologize. But I think he passed on a Thursday. On Tuesday night, he called me. Wow. Of course, I didn't know what was going to happen. But on Tuesday night, he called me and he was apologetic. Sorry, it's taking me so long to get back to you. Told me a couple of funny hospital stories. Was making fun of himself, very self-deprecating. And then we always, at the end of our calls, we would always say, Coach, I love you. And he'd say, I love you too, John, or whatever. And but this call, it hit me. He ended the call. He said, "John, you take care of yourself."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting chills right now repeating it, because just like that, "John, you take care of yourself," with that kind of pregnant pause.
Yeah, right.
And 2 days later, he was gone.
Wow.
And it was, I think he knew, and he was doing, like, I know he had some Zoom calls with his own players in that time frame. And I think he was kind of taking care of business. Yeah. And he didn't say, "Hey, look, my time here is shorter." He didn't say, but just the way he said it, and it's going to stick with me forever.
The closer. That said a lot about who he thought about you.
Yep.
Yeah. It's family. But been very fortunate to have some guys. And then, later in life, I'm going to end on this one. Just in kind of the last 5 years or so, I've gotten to know Larry Brown, in the mid-90s, when I came to Wesleyan, he was coaching the Pacers.
Okay.
Indiana. And he brought his team to Chapel Hill for training camp.
Right.
And I worked it out. I went and sat in for either 2 or 3 days of training camp. And then he brought them back and I did it again. And then when he went to Philly, he brought his team down. And I went to watch them in training camp for 2 years. And then when he took the Charlotte Bobcats job,
mm-hmm.
he took them to Wilmington for training camp. And I went down and I just really loved his approach to teaching. I loved his X's and O's. A lot of stuff that we do today are things that we've stolen from Coach Brown.
Yes.
So I observed him through all these years. We had shaken hands and I thanked him for allowing me to be there, but he had no idea who I was. And right. during COVID, we connected on a Zoom call and I followed up, and he's been amazing to me as well. Mm-hmm. And, those guys are all, from my summer league coach to my high school coach, all the way through, and so many other guys. I learn from everybody. I learn literally from everybody that I'm around, and feel very fortunate. Basketball has connected me with so many great people.
Well, Coach, me hearing all those personalities, guys that impacted you, I see how they've impacted you as far as you spreading that type of behavior. You know what I'm saying? And so I can say the same about yourself. Just selfless. You know, I called you at Fayetteville State as a head coach, asked some questions, non-basketball. And you immediately hit me back, and it's never a time, 25-year period, that you haven't responded to my call. So now to hear those relationships and how it has continued to kind of transfuse to you, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense, Coach. And I appreciate you sharing that. And like I said, that's genuine, because all the things you're saying about the guy that impacted you, you have the same personality.
Well, thank you.
And to all the young coaches out there listening, go work basketball camps. this is like, we are all camp guys here. And yeah. That just lets you know, like, if you want to learn from somebody, go to their camps, be around yes. them, figure out a way to be around them, man. Because you never know the relationships that may be formed from those camps. And they carry on and on and on throughout the coaching career. So as amazing. And like we were talking, how camps kind of have faded a little bit.
Right.
And the grind of working the summer schedule.
Yeah.
Of going from camp to camp and just getting in the car and being gone for the summer.
City.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Scott, you could get a couple of guys on this thing. And do a whole show on summer camps.
No question.
Absolutely.
Coach, yes. We're going to do it. Because, my first job, with Burke, I was at Wake Forest. Dave Odom approached me. I'm working just hard, just working, learning, grasping. And he comes to me and says, I know you talked about being a coach. I know a guy at Chawan. Doesn't pay much and all that. And that's how that door opened for me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Boom, and there history from there, but just working camp, working hard.
And you know what? If you guys will indulge me for a second, Coach Odom played a huge role in my debate. He never coached me, and I never worked for him, but he played a huge role for me as well.
Wow.
And I did work Wake Forest camp at one time when I was coming through. But
it's hot. It's hot there too.
It is hot, but Coach Odom. When I was in junior high school, was the coach at Durham High School.
Get out.
Wow. Durham High School doesn't exist anymore. The physical building is now the Durham School of the Arts.
Okay.
But Durham High School was coached by Dave Odom. And Dave Odom ran a summer league. And I played in the summer league for Coach Odom. Not for him, but the league that he was running, and he helped me get into five star.
Get out,
as a player. And he's been amazing to me along the way. And still comes. He's comes periodically and speaks at our coaches get together in the spring.
And Coach, I tell you, with you on board, we go left and right, because we didn't even talk about that. I mean, I don't know how long you've had it, but you have. Tremendous coaching clinics annually, and you have who's who there, and I've been a time or two, and so let's talk about that. I know we're kind of getting off, but I just we have to talk about the coaching clinics that you host and how you connect coaches. And can you talk about that briefly, what time of year is and some of the people that have been to that camp, to the clinic, excuse me?
Yeah, well, it started out former Chihuahuan coach Jim Tribbett, who succeeded Coach Burke, and I got together one spring after the season in Murfreesboro. We traded X's and O's. We chopped it up about basketball, and then we went to Waltz and got the hamburger.
Waltz, yeah, I've been cussed out there many times on recruiting. Meetings, no doubt.
The following spring, Coach Tribbett came to Rocky Mount and chopped it up a bit more, and we went to Brian's Cheesesteaks, got another sandwich, and I guess Coach Tribbett figured he'd learned everything he could get from me. Hey, two springs with Thompson, and I've learned everything. He's got nothing left, so we need to invite four guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we got Coach Burke involved.
Okay.
And who at that point had
semi-retired.
He might have still been doing a little scouting for the Trailblazers, but he was in Wilson, so we got Coach Burke to come over, a couple more guys. And so I think maybe there were five of us. And so we spent a full day. And the next year, I think there were eight of us. Wow. And I don't know what year it kind of went from 8 to 20 or whatever, but we've kind of been in a holding pattern. And some of that really, truthfully, is by design, because we like the close-knit, the agile feel of, you know, we can move from the classroom to the court, back to the classroom. Whatever, we can be on video, we can be on the whiteboard, we can run, make copies. And but we've had everybody from middle school to AAU to high school, Division I, II, III, NAI, junior college, D-League, and NBA, and international. And so it really is a very diverse group, and it's guys who just want to get better. And I think, you know, one of my favorite things is because camps aren't what they used to be, Scott, we've got some of these young guys who are coming through who either, whether they played for me or maybe they're a young assistant somewhere, and they're hearing from the legends. They're hearing from the Pete Gaudettes. They're hearing from Dave Odom. They're hearing from
John Thompson,
Mitch Bonaguro, and Larry Brown, and on and on. Jerry Wainwright.
Yes, an all-time great storytellers.
You know, but we've had tremendous Division II coaches come and speak. You know, Bart Lundy when he was at Queens.
Yes.
Joey Higginbotham from Mount Olive. You know, Rob Burke has come and spoken over the years, and high school coaches, you know, right there in Fayetteville, Ike Walker's been a part of
the lead coach
from day one, and he's as good a coach as you'll find.
I know.
Talking about learning, you know, I've been there recruiting players. My current assistant is a former Jack Britt player for Coach Walker, and I went to watch practice to watch players for recruiting purposes, and I'm taking notes on practice.
No question.
I mean, hey, coach, do you have all that stuff on paper, all those X's and O's? Can I have them? Because I'm learning from Coach Walker. But those are the kind of people that we have. And I've had guys get job offers out of our clinic.
Wow.
I've had guys get job interviews out of our clinic. And just really, it's fun for me to, again, connect, you know, some older coaches and some younger guys, help guys network, and think everybody in there is trying to get better. Pete Gillen is a retired coach. He works for CBS, and he's in there taking notes as diligently as a 25-year-old GA somewhere. Everybody's just trying to get better.
And I can vouch from experience. I've had a chance to come a time or two, and it's phenomenal. And I look forward to getting back as my schedule allows me to. But I could definitely confirm everything you're saying.
You are welcome anytime. Scott, obviously you as well.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely take you up on that one.
No question.
You know, just being around the greats like that, it always gets you inspired to, you know, just open your mind back up to the coaching world again. So definitely looking forward to that. Looking for the invitation in the email.
No doubt.
So we're going to close it out with our last segment, Coach. We call it our Coaches Anonymous segment. Basically, a great, funny story about an anonymous coach. Now, you've been doing this a long time, so I'm sure you have some great coaches stories. If we are past the statute of limitations and you want to say the coach's name, you can. If you want to keep them anonymous, just call them Coach. So, Coach John Thompson, give us a great Coach is Anonymous story.
Well, just because I don't know all the laws surrounding statute of limitations, and I cannot, at this point in my career, I do not want to enter the witness protection program. I'm going to leave all those stories for another time.
Okay.
But so working the Duke camp back when Coach Gaudette was still on the staff there, I had I guess been there long enough and done enough of something. Maybe I was so poor of a coach in game situations. They put me in charge of a gym. And so I was kind of to supervise the games, make sure the games were run on time and the teams were where they were supposed to be and so forth. And so during the game, and so there's two courts running simultaneously, but on the far court, there's a coach who's sitting down, which is the first kind of camp no-no.
No-no, yeah. No,
and then number two, he's reading a newspaper. And I look over and I'm like, am I really seeing it? Like, I want to, before I intervene.
With clarity.
Is this guy really looking at the newspaper while the game is going on? So I'm watching and I'm like, yeah, this guy is in the paper. And so I start to make my way around the first court that I'm on, and I'm making my way over. And about the time I get within earshot of the coach, he said, hold on, time out. I said, well, maybe he's paying more attention than I think. And he brings the team over and he says, hey, look, any of you guys know a 5-letter word for, and he's doing a crossword puzzle. So look, you can't make this stuff up. So I had to talk to him about, you know, coaching during camp, and I had to talk to Coach Gaudette, and I don't think that guy was ever invited back.
Did he make it through the camp?
You know, that part I don't remember. I'm not sure that he did. But and the other really important question is, I don't know whether he finished the crossword puzzle.
I think at that time that was the most important thing to him.
Right.
Okay. Coach, phenomenal. And you gave us, again, it's another great idea. Just a camp episode, just summer camp episode. I think we can have material. But Coach Bowage, he said a crossword puzzle. Said stop. I thought he was going to call a play, a UOB. He wanted to get the crossword puzzle. And this is at Duke University?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Wow. That may be one of our best Coaches Anonymous stories. So, Coach Thompson, we tremendously appreciate your time to get a chance to know you better. We know you on the coaching circuit, but just getting to know your coaching background and the things you've been through, and for all aspiring coaches, again, work the camps. And you just never know the relationships you are going to build while working these camps. So, Coach Key, any final words?
I'll tell you what, I appreciate your humility. That's who you are. That's genuine. But I've been in the business going on 25 years, and we have two types of coaches. We have the coaches that the media elevates and appreciates, and then we have the coaches that us coaches respect. And you're in that line item where every coach I know has a great amount of respect for you because you can really coach. And we know that. And I hope your peers appreciate that. But I thank you. And we're growing this like your program. We have some ideas moving forward, maybe coming down in person, maybe to your coaching clinic. So I appreciate you on the first phase of this train. And I just have one request, Coach. You know, next time I see you, I want to get one of those shirts. So I will wear it on a broadcast. But we look forward to following you.
Definitely.
Best of luck during your year. And we'll see you real soon.
I appreciate it. You and Scott, send me your sizes, text me your sizes, and I'll send you both a shirt. And listen, I love what you're doing. I love the game. I love teaching, and I love the players that I work with. I know you guys feel similarly, and thanks for having me on.
Pleasure's all mine. Coach Scott wears an XL. I wear a large.
Very good.
I'll get you the right size. It's a large.
All right. Next thing I will need is an address.
We'll get that taken care of, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Once again, another great episode of Life on the Road. As you can tell by just the episode, this episode, again, was bigger than basketball. And Coach Thompson gave us a great story and about his journey and how his mission became bigger than basketball. So, Coach Key, any final words?
Yeah, always amazed to see the end result being so successful, but it's how it started. Humble beginnings, taking a chance, geographically working in upstate New York and just being places as assistant, being humble, having a variety of jobs, then to matriculate to Nohanna Wesleyan University and then just have a culture, having the Nohanna Wesleyan way, understanding the workings behind the program, why it's successful on the court and off, like you said, bigger than basketball. Helping young people be successful. Excited again for another great story, another journey, life on the road.
All right. So, Coach Key, take us on out.
Until next time, keep it in the road.
And keep it between the lines. We want to thank you for your continued support of the Life on the Road podcast. Please comment on each episode and give us that 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast. And make sure you hit the follow button so you don't miss an episode. You can also watch all the episodes on our YouTube page and follow us on social media at Coach AKSB. Thanks again to all of our guests and listeners. This wouldn't be possible without you.